Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Fresh Perspective. Thank you for joining us, where we'll take another look at life with my guest today, Andrew Douglas. Andrew, thank you very much for being willing to talk to me and share some of your amazing, mind-blowing, life-changing insights. No pressure.
Wonderful to be here, Francois. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Listen, first question, what do you do?
I'm in the wine industry, the South African wine industry, which is strange for an Aussie to be saying that, but I'm in the wine industry. We focus on direct-to-customer. Effectively, what that translates to is we help wineries sell wine themselves to customers, not via middlemen, distributors, or retailers.
Ah, you're cutting out the middleman.
100%, and for the primary reason that when it's done that way, it's three times more profitable. And I'm sure many of your listeners will know that as fantastic and fabulous as our wine is, the wine producers themselves need all the help they can get to be more sustainable and more profitable.
Three times.
Three times.
That is amazing. I did not realize that. Okay. And so you said you're an Aussie. So will you be moving back to Australia when you win the World Cup again, or is it done? What moved you to South Africa? Mate, I'm assuming it's the World Cup. I mean, what else can it be, right?
I came here on holiday, and this was a long, long time ago. I stayed with a business partner of my uncle's who was doing some work here, and I was expecting to arrive in South Africa on a dusty runway with Matamara Warriors up one end, jumping up and down. But what I found was paradise, and not just, you know, physically or geographically, but the actual the people. And then, long story short, I met a girl.
Yeah, that makes sense. And this is she still in your life, or did that just open your eyes for?
No, she's still in my life. We've been married for, we've been together for a long time, married for coming up to 11 years. We have two kids, and we live in the wineland. So we're very blessed, very, very fortunate.
Awesome. Okay. 11 years of marriage, two kids. Okay. What are some of the things that you notice are very different culturally? Even though you've been here, obviously you've been here a long time, but what are some of the things that still kind of stand out for you? Like, oh yeah, that's a South African thing.
That's a good question. I love Australia. If I wasn't here, I'd be there, but I have no intention of ever leaving South Africa, and neither does my wife. Possibly if our kids, for whatever reason, ended up in Australia or somewhere else further down the line, we'd consider moving to be closer to them. But that day is a long, long way away. I think the similarities, I'll start with the similarities and then I'll focus on the differences.
Yeah.
The similarities are we're both Australians and South Africans are fun-loving, outdoor, generally humble, direct, genuine people. And I think that's why we get along so well. I think the fact that we both, you know, that sports and sports culture is such a, to the both an important part of our national fabrics, you know, who we are and how we relate to each other helps. And the differences are, there's a far greater sense of adventure here in South Africa than there is in Australia. And I think that's one of the things that really revitalizes and, well, vitalizes me and keeps me alive and interested is
what do you mean by sense of adventure? Can you define that?
Australia's a very safe place. Okay. And I don't mean safe as in crime. I mean safe as in predictable. As far as life can be predictable, it's a mature market, a mature economy. So there's not a lot of volatility. Whereas in South Africa, you open the newspaper, you can't make this stuff up. It's stranger than fiction. So there's a real sense of adventure and like living on the edge here, for me anyway, which doesn't suit everyone. And that's possibly why many South Africans have left, ironically, for Australia. But, you know, you either embrace it and it works for you, or you don't and you leave. And a long time ago, I was the Australian Honorary Consul, and I used to meet with a lot of South Africans, obviously, who were looking to get passports or renew passports and go to Australia. And many of them would sit in my office in Cape Town at the time and eventually ask me, what's a guy like you doing in a place like this? You know, basically saying, what are you doing living here when you could be living in your own home, which is utopia? And for the first little while, I was, oh, that's nice of you to say so. I'm proud to be Australian. I'm proud of my upbringing, and I'm proud, you know, of my country of birth. But the glass is either half full or half empty. And if you're the sort of person that sees it as being half empty, it's going to be half empty there as well. Some of the problems and the challenges that you face here might be removed by moving there, but you're going to have new problems and challenges that will be added, different to what you have here. So I really think it's perspective. Another phrase that I love coining is, when you buy the bull, you get the horns. And I think South Africa is a bull. It's a magnificent, you know, just fabulous beast of an animal, and powerful. And if you're willing to sort of grab it by the tail, it's going to be exhilarating and exciting, but be careful because there are pointy parts as well. And that's how I see South Africa. And then I think the compared to Australia in that regard. And then I think one of the things that saddens me, and since I first got here, it is getting better as South Africa sort of really re-enters the global economy properly. I mean, bearing in mind, I came here in 2004, 10 years after Mandela was elected, and I guess the new South Africa was born. But when I first arrived here, I was quite sad by what I would call an inferiority complex that a lot of South Africans have of South Africa compared to other, I guess, first world countries or countries that they could relate to through their culture, like Australia, New Zealand, Canada, US, the UK. And that always saddened me that, you know, it had to be from overseas for it to be good. And it had to be, and nothing here was good enough. You know, and I'm talking about products and technology and services and whatever else. And I think that's, which is kind of weird when you think about, you know, what South Africa's been able to achieve with its sport on a relatively comparatively low budget, and comparatively smaller talent pools. It's a strange thing to say. I'm basically saying that they're lacking in confidence, and I'm pleased to say that in the sort of 18 years that I've been here, I have seen a change. I mean, I can see the momentum building. I can see that, you know, the next generation of entrepreneurs and innovators coming through without those sort of historical ties or baggage or guilt. That's restraining them from, you know, from flying high. So I guess I'm sort of talking my way around here, but you know, that inferiority complex saddened me initially, but it is getting progressively better.
That's a very interesting point, Andrew. Can you guess at why? Why do you think that is, it was there, and why do you think it's changing?
Yeah, well, this is my opinion. I think it's largely due to being closed off from the rest of the world for a long period of time. I think made, you know, I think, I guess maybe a level of guilt that is, in most cases, unfounded. and just the circumstance of the environment that people grew up and they lived in. I just think that a lack of access to global markets and I guess the world economy, I'm specifically talking about business now. And then to answer your second part of your question is why is it changing? I just think it's because, you know, the further, you know, time heals all wounds, and the further we move away from that time, we leave that further and further behind in our rearview mirror, and we move towards a new tomorrow and a brighter day.
Yeah, I have a thing about that, you know, time heals all wounds. I really think it matters what you do at that time, because if you just let time elapse, it doesn't heal wounds. It actually sometimes can let them fester and, you know, get really bad. So just a 2 cents on that point. Now I want to transition to the business and entrepreneurial world. When did you transition, or have you always been, you mentioned already that you worked in the consulate, if I heard correctly. So when did you transition? What happened?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think if you'd asked me 10 or 15, 20 years ago, if I was an entrepreneur, I would have said, yes, I was. But the reality is I wasn't. I was a small business owner, and I specialized in events.
I've never had a job. Between those two, Andrew, sorry.
Yeah, well, an entrepreneur has to have a far wider range of vision, of skill set, of connecting the dots, of operating in different environments, facing different challenges, finding new solutions. It'll make sense, more sense perhaps, when I explain the context.
Yeah.
I've never had a job, completely unemployable, left university, got straight into events, which is what I did. Did that relatively successfully in the US, the UK, back in Australia, and then made my way to South Africa, where I did that for many years as well, producing my own events. Running other people's events. I ran the campaign for the Soccer World Cup at the V&A Waterfront and Melrose Art. I also founded Africa's largest beer fest, modeled on the Oktoberfest, the largest wine show. And then in 2019, we had those two events, plus another event, which was called Tough Mudder, which was a obstacle course race similar to the Warrior Race or the Impi Challenge that I'm sure South Africans have heard of. And so when I say I was a small business owner, I was basically an event promoter. I had the recipe, ticket sales, production budgets, sponsorship, marketing, PR, stakeholder management. You know, that's what I've done, you know, ever since I've sort of left university. And then I'd been, and very much in hindsight, I was a small business owner. We moved to the Winelands in early February, in February 2020, because we'd been increasingly invited or asked to become more involved in the wine industry, get closer to some of our exhibitors who were participating in our wine show, and have a look at some more challenges in the wine industry. And the wine industry is full of challenges. So we did that. And then in March 2020, everything changed. Mm. There were no events. There was a mass participation ban. Our event business, you know, hasn't produced an event since October 2019. Our first events are all in August this year. Towards the sort of the mid to late last year, you saw some promoters starting to produce events again. It was a pretty dark period of time for events. But Francois, it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Mm.
The best thing that ever happened to me, because I remember being up on the mountain behind our place in Somerset West on the Helderberg there and just asking, why has this happened? Why has this happened? And I realized I've got to the point where this is all happening for a reason. And this was my opportunity to start again and to reimagine how I spent my time and where I made my impact. I realized that I was underperforming. I was coasting. I wasn't trying hard enough, and I was a fraction. My impact was a fraction of what it could be, and that at my core, I wanted to be someone who used his talent and skills and potential to make a maximum impact on the world around me. And
what percentage, Andrew, did you feel like you were, if you were coasting, where were you at potential wise? I know it's a weird question, and just to gauge compared how you feel now.
Compared to where I am now, 10%.
Sure.
So effectively, I realized that this happened to me for a reason. Obviously, COVID didn't happen to make Andrew Douglas a better businessman, but to me, it meant that it gave me permission to fail. It gave permission for me to try something new. It gave me permission to learn new things. It just gave me permission just to say, screw it, let's do it. Who cares? What's the worst that can happen? And since that time, in the last 3 years, we've built a serious business with multiple business within it. We've made multiple acquisitions, started multiple businesses. We're looking at acquisitions in foreign territories to assist South African wine in those regions. We've already done one capital raise about 12 months ago. It was successful, and then we're in the middle of, we're literally 2 weeks into a new one now, to principally just find ways to enable South African wine producers to sell wine directly, how we can facilitate that process, increase the rate of direct-to-customer sales for them, and therefore profitability of their businesses. But it's transformational. And the why behind the what, I mean, we're forecasting to return R1 billion to wine producers over the next 5 years through our effort, through our businesses.
Mm.
And the why behind the what is that through that economic impact, we're going to see social impact. And that's the real motivating factor for us. I didn't tell you what events I was doing and why I came to South Africa with that event, but it was basically a cause-related event working with kids around positive lifestyle messaging. Australia with Aboriginal kids from remote parts of Australia. The World Health Organization invited me to come here and do the same thing with at-risk youth in townships, working in the sort of HIV/AIDS space. So there's always been that purpose-led part of me. And now I feel for the first time, in over the last 3 years, that I have the opportunity to not only build a successful commercial enterprise, but have significant social impact.
Mm. Wow, what a impactful, awe-inspiring summary of the last 3 years. What are some of the things that you feel, looking back now, kept you within that 10% range of your potential?
Family, getting married, having kids. It wasn't that I wasn't busy. I was just.
But you still have those now, hard, right? Family.
No, exactly. I do. And I actually take that back. It was more just life, I guess, is what I mean. Like, I think I'd had a bit of a stumble in my late 20s, with a business partnership, which took a lot of confidence away from me. And I went from having this expansive, ambitious mindset in my 20s, where I was literally going to take this event that I was producing in Australia all over the world. In fact, I arrived here and visited 8 sub-Saharan countries, and then was invited by a number of Caribbean countries to come do the same thing over there, and working closely with the World Health Organization and UNAIDS to do that. And then the rug was ripped out from underneath me, and I had a falling out with my partner, and I lost a lot of confidence. And at that point, my attitude became, what can I build that I can control and no one could ever take from me? As opposed to a expansive mindset where the sky wasn't the limit, it was just the beginning. And so mindset was everything, a recalibration of my mindset from a defensive, controlling, detailed mindset, and now more of a just what can be unlocked, you know, just broadening the vision and ultimately impact.
I want to talk about family because you said you take it back, but obviously your mindset about family and you know, your children and wife and how that fits into all of this also shifted. Because whereas maybe way back then you felt like this is kind of holding me back in a certain sense, or I need to be safe, or I need to provide my, I don't know what your reasons were. You can talk about that.
Well, you've summarized all of them. It was all of those reasons. It was the need to, this is what I was good at. This was providing us with the lifestyle we needed. Was I happy enough? Was I fulfilled? Not really. But, you know, I was the bread and butter. My wife was looking after the kids. And, it was I wasn't going to take a step or a leap of faith unless I was pushed, and I was pushed.
So what would you say to your younger self that you think might start that or plant that seed that might germinate over time? I mean, like you said, COVID gave you kind of that opportunity, that permission, that to fail, you know, because the business stopped. So might as well go for it.
Yeah, I think my older self would say to my younger self that, I'd always saw myself as a risk taker. Or, I mean, anyone that knows the events industry knows that it's a complex sport. I'm pragmatic. I don't take unnecessary risks. I take calculated risks. Obviously, it's not all sunshine, unicorns, and rainbows, baby. but I would have said, you know, just don't be scared. You know, just try. You know, just be curious, be adventurous, and anything's possible. A colleague of mine who I work with said something to me very early on in 2020 when literally the SHIT hit the fan, when I was going through a stage of self-doubt and lacking belief and faith in the new direction and what was happening. And he said, Andrew, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're probably right.
I think that's a quote from Henry Ford. Whether you think you can or can't, you're right. Okay. So now this thing is going and you're feeling like you're growing to more of your potential and this dream seems to me expanding in terms of the possibilities and the impact. And what do you feel are some of the things that might even now hold you back? Do you sometimes see some of those things, realize it? Do you feel those moments where maybe in the past you would have held back or say, okay, wait a minute, let's play it safe? And what do you do with those moments?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's the financial reality, obviously, and the runway. I guess anyone that's running entrepreneurial businesses that are looking to scale needs to consider that. But I think one of the things I've cultivated, I think I always had it in me or was relatively adept that it was talent identification, finding the right people and finding people that, you know, supported the why or bought into the vision, not my vision, the broader vision. So that's something. And asking for help. I mean, previously, I think, I relied on myself pretty much for everything, whereas now I'm happy to not be the specialist and happy to for there to be people who know certain things about certain things. More than me in that particular field and be comfortable with that and trust them to do what they're supposed to and trust them with what they do. But I think the only thing that really limits me is belief. That's really all it is. And I know that sounds corny and like, where's Tony Robbins when you need him to jump in and, you know, razzle us all up. But, Limiting beliefs has been a theme for me for the last 2 years, addressing those and the danger of limiting belief. You need to be pragmatic, but you can be optimistically pragmatic. And you're only really limited by what you believe.
Oh, I want to get into that because that's my field. That's my jam, the belief system and those things. But first, let's go back to finding the right people. What's your criteria? I heard recently Warren Buffett is like, he's got, you know, integrity, intelligence, and initiative. He's always looking for that. If you don't have the first one, the other two might actually be a problem for your company. So do you have certain criteria, or what are you looking for? Are you more intuitive?
It's a good question. I think people that are self-starters, all of the things you've just mentioned, integrity, you know, honesty, transparency, courtesy, kindness, you want to like the people that you work with. And you want them to feel the same way about those sort of, you know, personality traits, and to support that thinking. But, you know, I look for people that want to actually change the world, and it might be doing their bit to change the world. It might be playing their small role, but they don't want to think small or be small. They want to be expansive, and they want to know that what they do, it might be a business, and let's hope it makes a ton of money. But they want to know that, you know, no one's getting hurt. You know, this is cause-related commerce. You know, this is stuff that can have lasting impact and legacy. And I get very excited when I obviously share what the MO of our business is, and we're obviously enabling wine producers to sell wine themselves. And like, it's a vision that is easily sellable. And I don't know anyone I haven't spoken to who hasn't said, that's amazing. I want to get involved. And that lights me up. And then you're not having to inspire people or motivate people. The vision motivates them. So they have to be able to be sort of self-sufficient, self-starting, but they have to be able to plug into that vision. And then, you know, that's the life force of the operation.
And in terms of asking for help, Andrew, when you're kind of leading a team and you know, inspiring them and keeping them on track and excited, even though, you know, you are looking for people who kind of buy in and do all of those things for themselves. I know some entrepreneurs, leaders get really stuck on asking for help because they're afraid that that'll seal the confidence of the team in them, or damage the confidence the team has in them to lead, or they want to feel like they should be the best at everything. Otherwise, why are they allowed to lead? Which is also part of limiting beliefs. So what's kind of your take or angle on something like that?
Yeah, and this is definitely, I mean, at 46, this is something that I've really only learned in the last year or two, is it's okay not to be everything to everyone. It's okay just to be really good at what you're good at and to lean on other people for the bits that you need. I think the whole hierarchical approach to leadership where, you know, I'm the big boss and everyone is under me is also outdated as well. Like, I am the leader of our business. I do motivate and inspire our team. It's my job. And it's what I enjoy doing, and that's where I'm at my most powerful. But equally, you know, I've learned to love collaborating a lot more. I get a real kick when I overhear or notice or I'm informed that a meeting has happened or something has happened without me and great decisions have been taken and actions move forward or performed without my involvement. I mean, that is real capacity building. And that's what we're doing. We're building capacity. That's when I get really, really excited. So you can't be everything to everyone and be a capacity builder.
I love that. The last 1 or 2 years, you said that's kind of changed for you. What happened? How did that change for you?
An event business is, our business was sort of 10 or 12 people. As I said, a very a simple formula. Listen, it was always a challenge to make, to try. And so I think it's the dumbest way to make the least amount of money. It's certainly fun, and it's certainly fun, and you know, lots of good times and memories have come out of that, and I'm sure will continue when we get our own wine show back on the road in August this year. But I think when you level up, which I have, in terms of your ambition and your the impact, the legacy that you want to leave, and the task at hand, when you realize just how enormous that is, I very quickly realized that, you know, I can't do this alone, and I need not only you know, employees and team, I need partners, and I need you know, people with competencies that I do not have. And it sort of happened over time, but as I said, I get very, very excited when things happen that I don't sort of participate in or know about, and it's in areas that I don't necessarily have any experience in, but you know, I'm still the visionary of the business or the entrepreneur, and it's okay to not know everything about everything.
And how did you empower people to be comfortable and confident to say, okay, let's make this decision and execute?
There's a little bit of guile and you know, wisdom and experience involved in that, I guess. Obviously, it comes a lot back to character of people and trust, and people feeling trusted. You do need to have safety nets in place, particularly on the financial side, if it has a financial implication.
Andrew, I want to interrupt you. Sorry, that's beautiful. So people feeling trusted versus you trusting people. Can you talk about that for a bit? Because I think that's a very important point you're making.
Yeah, and it's simple. I mean, obviously, I need to trust people, but there's always a leap of faith with any new person, or even someone that's been with us for a while. You know, there's always a leap of faith. I do constantly think upside downside in terms of entrusting people with certain tasks and responsibilities. But at the end of the day, you know, we can't grow unless it happens. Face on the other side of that is when people feel entrusted, or when people feel trusted, I think it just adds another foot, makes them a foot or 2 foot taller. They feel responsible, they feel accountable, they feel important, and they feel ownership. They really do. So there's a big difference, as you've rightly pointed out, between trusting someone and someone feeling trusted or entrusted to complete a task or responsibility.
Thank you. Okay, I interrupted you. Did you finish your thought there, or is it gone now?
I've forgotten my thought.
All right. Hopefully this was more valuable to the listener than whatever you were about to say. Sorry. now I want to transition a bit to the personal development side, which you touched on throughout this. So what do you do now that keeps you on that growth edge, that keeps on taking you to exploring your limits?
It's a really good question. When I went through that sort of stage in early 2020, when, you know, my professional world was turned upside down, I made some pretty big decisions around, you know, what were the tools and the skills or the methodologies that I needed to embrace in order to sort of embark on this new adventure. And I did lots of different things, but one of them was to join an organization called the Entrepreneurs Organization. basically surround myself with entrepreneurs who were going through similar things that I was. Effectively, I'm sure listeners have also heard of the YPO, Young Presidents Organization. It's very similar. EO is just a lot better. coincidentally, I joined a forum, very quickly lasting relationships with a team of six of us. We ultimately decided to leave EO because we felt like the EO wasn't giving us the value that we were looking for and the most amount of value that we got out of the exercise with each other. And we decided to actually form our own forum. And it's been incredible. And in terms of not just professionally, but personally and from a family perspective as well, it's been a really, really good source of support for me, and I know that the guys feel the same way too. So that was a big part of my process. The second thing that I did was to join something that was called Story to Stage, which is effectively helping you with your TED Talk. And it took me some time to find my TED Talk or find my story that I could deliver in front of large audiences. But I've got there eventually, still refining it. But effectively, it's the sort of thing that, if you're looking to sort of build capability or capacity in the field that we are in direct to customer, there's a lot of sort of hand-holding and working closely with producers to help enable them to do it themselves. It's really, don't give a man a fish, teach a man to fish and give him a rod, sort of a analogy, and a rising tide lifts all boats. So Story to Stage was the next thing. Sleep became a big part of my life in terms of being able to manage sleep, exercise, diet. I did work quite hard in a number of different areas, but I'd say principally it was those first two that I mentioned.
Sleep is such a big thing that we often miss. And you spoke about, before I think we started this, the podcast about visualizing and how athletes use that. But I mean, the science on that is so powerful in terms of performance in any field. Step one is, what's your sleep like? And address that first and foremost, because the knock-on domino effect of that is massive. Is it the lifestyle change that helps you sleep better, or is it the mindset? Because it seems you have more things to actually keep you up than you used to, but sleeping better.
Yeah, it is. And I've had to, I think, and it's because of the increased workload and I guess mental processing load.
Yeah.
But I've had to work harder at that and be a lot more intentional around sleep habits and rest and everything that comes with that, just so that I could continue to perform at the level that I'm performing at. If I had to be honest, my work life balance is not exactly where I'd like it to be. It's still very much too much work focus. We're coming out of that sort of survival mode, or that sort of frantic, sort of frenetic place that we were in, and getting some stability and runway in order to then sort of, lead a more balanced lifestyle.
Are there any kind of methods or tactics that you use when you're lying in bed and you start milling around, the things start milling around in your head? What do you use to kind of calm yourself down?
Very personal, Prathwa. But what I have this little game. People talk about I have a couple of games actually. One of them is what I call a gratitude game, that helps to relax me, where I go through and I basically thank the universe for all the things that I'm grateful for, all the things I have, rather than focusing on all the things that I don't have. My health, my skill, my ability, my genetics, my talents, everything that I've been blessed with, my wife, all of those things for her, my daughter, my son, my immediate family in terms of my parents and my sister and my wife, family, and then my friends and those important people in my life, like the forum that I mentioned earlier, my colleagues, my partners, and I just keep talking about that over and over again to myself, which is part of my process of maintaining a positive mindset. I thank the universe for this incredible adventure that I'm having, sort of in my mid 40s. To be honest, I thought had eluded me earlier in my life when things got real at such a young age, and I'd sort of shut things down. But I'm really grateful for that. And then I have another little strange little game. It's a bit like counting sheep, but it's basically just a little game that I play in my head where I imagine myself in a certain place, and then effectively I zoom out of it. There's like 13 or 14 different steps to it, from where I begin to I basically end up in the universe. I go forwards and back and forwards and back, then I wake up the next morning.
I love it. Thank you very much for sharing that. Even though you said it was personal, thank you for sharing it anyway. I think that's I love the zoom in and zoom out one. That's one I've never heard before, and I'll be using that as well. I've got my own little methods that I use, so I'll share one with you, just so you don't feel alone in sharing personal stuff. So mine is a bit sillier, I think, but I don't have the same kind of struggle sleeping that I used to have. But one of the things I did is I went to a time where I felt completely present. Because, when you're milling around in your head, you're not present. You're not, trying to sleep or going to bed. You're fixing and having debates with people and all of those kind of things that we all feel when we're trying to sleep. Or worried, will I sleep now? Let's try harder, whatever. So when I was about 17 years old, we used to go fish a lot with my father on a boat in Mossel Bay. I don't know if you've been there. But one day we went out, and it was just me and him. And we got caught in this storm and mist. And this was before GPS was, at the level it is now, we had the compass. So we had no landmarks or anything. So my father had used the compass to kind of navigate us back to the harbor. And because of the storm and the waves, you have to really face the waves when you're trying to go into a direction. You can't, attack them diagonally or sideways, because that'll tip you over. So we had to attack them straight on and then kind of move to the direction we're trying to go and then turn and face them again. I had to go stand at the front of the boat to kind of get some weight on the front to bring the nose down when we do that. And Andrew, it was the most scary and exhilarating experience of my life standing there. So I was holding onto the anchor rope, and we'll crest this wave and just like drop down, and it's splash, and I'll be standing there holding onto this. And this is the most embarrassing part, but I revisit it whenever I struggle. I was singing Roxette's Joyride as loud as I can, because I know no one could hear me. So that's my little one, if you want to try that. Maybe not the boat bot, but the Joyride bit, definitely.
I love it. I love it.
Okay, so last few questions, Andrew. I want to talk a little bit, maybe, I'm getting even more personal now, but what are some of the values that you feel, without you teaching them or sharing them with your family and especially your kids, what do you think are some of the values that now shine through as you are being transformed by making these leaps of faith, as you call them?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the importance and power of being authentic is something, is definitely a theme. We're all unique and special in our own way, but spending your life trying to be anything other than yourself is just a futile exercise, and so sad when you see it. I quite often see young people finding their way in their 20s who are still working out who they are, and I just really feel sad for them because I can relate. But I think finding your authentic self as quickly as possible in your life is just invaluable, and I think it's so, you know, it's critical to being happy and living your best. I think that's number one.
While you think, can I ask a follow-up on the authenticity? What do you think stops people from being authentic?
They're worried that they're not good enough. Or that their authentic self is not actually what the world needs or wants.
Yeah. And
that's my own personal view.
Yeah, I agree. So when people are a different version or a fake version, a pretend version, a facade or whatever, and people accept that, they know that's not me, so they don't feel accepted anyway, which is horrible.
Yeah. So that's the first one. And then the second one is, and this is something I think that I probably really started to appreciate in the last two, something that I hope I've, you know, certainly discussed with my kids, is that being brave is not being scared. You know, being brave is being actually scared shitless, but still attempting to do it anyway.
Thank you.
So that's an important one for me, and something that I've certainly tried to teach my kids. It's not being scared is not being brave. Yep. Being brave is being scared out of your wits, but still trying.
Going for it. Yeah, love it. Okay, last question. What do you feel is your superpower? What do you feel, you were talking about being unique and all of that. What do you feel is like, I've got, and the role you play in the company and something only you can bring. So if you had to put words to your superpower, what is that?
I do think, I mean, this is going to sound glib or cliche, but I think my ability to be able to recognize not just talent but character in people, or, and by character, I mean, I'm no judge of someone's character. I mean, I'm, you know, what makes me, puts me in a position to judge someone on their character, but in terms of finding talent and character to match our vision and our goal, I think I'm very good at that. And, you know, when I look around at the, particularly the last 2 or 3 years of the people that have come into my life or presented themselves, I'd have to say that was my, one of my superpowers.
I like that a lot. Andrew, thank you very much. And, yeah, go ahead.
And my second one, Francois.
I love it.
My second one would be my humility.
Yeah, that shines through clearly as well.
There's an Aussie to a South African. Yeah.
Thank you very much for setting aside time to talk to me. And I'm very excited for people to hear this and learn from this. Thank you for what you're doing for the wine industry, but also the impact that that'll have on society at large. I appreciate you, and I'm grateful for having met you. And I look forward to many, many great conversations in the future.
Me too. Thanks for having me.